Het aanpakken van klimaatverandering is een van de meest urgente problemen en een globale uitdaging. Lisette Maddens is VN-jongerenvertegenwoordiger voor duurzame ontwikkeling. Zij was aanwezig bij de laatste twee VN-klimaattoppen en twee internationale duurzaamheidsconferenties. Lisette was op bezoek bij de studio's van KFB in Idaho in de Verenigde Staten. Zij spreekt met interviewer Nancy Casey over haar recente ervaringen.
This past year you attended the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change in Doha, Qatar. But you also attended the same conference in Durban, South Africa in 2011. And then you've also attended the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio de Janeiro. That was in 2012 this year. And last year, the United Nations Commission on Sustainable Development that met in New York City.
Right.
So this is there are these commissions and committees and meetings and protocols and numbers and things and structures to like kind of sort out and keep track of that's actually kind of difficult as you interpret what comes to you through the media. So I was wondering if just to start out, you could maybe describe these UN structures as they are meaningful to the work that you're doing and then explain how you fit into them as the Dutch youth representative to the UN, and then kind of finish off with giving us one concept or idea that's been really profound for you since you started doing this work, all in, you know, just a few sentences.
Wow. That's a big question. Yeah, I can understand there's a lot of terms going on in the UN and that it's difficult to understand what are these different committees are.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I will only talk about the UN and sustainable development. So actually it started all in 1992 when actually the first time the United Nations, all the countries of the world came together to Rio de Janeiro actually. And this is the first time when they said to each other, well, okay, we have this economic growth pattern, but it's not gonna last long. So we have to deal with this on a global level. We have to find solutions to make the development we're in, so this economic development, this growth we're in, we have to make it more sustainable and actually combine it also with the development work we're doing and like the differences in the world, developing countries, developed countries. We gotta make global solutions to come to a sustainable development. So this is where actually the Commission for Sustainable Development started in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. And then they made up three framework conventions, of which the Climate Change Convention is one, and this was the biggest convention. There was also the Convention on Biological Diversity and the Desertification Convention. But the Climate Change Convention was the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also where the Kyoto Protocol, which most people know about, started in 1997. So this was quite a successful convention also, where they got a lot of countries around the world to commit to reduction targets of CO2. So for me, as a youth representative, I go to the climate change conventions, which are once a year. So once every year around December, all the countries of the world come together to talk about climate change. And I also go to the Commission on Sustainable Development. So this is the commission, actually the broader framework of actually everything that has to do with sustainable development and the UN. They're talking about it in this committee. And last year in Rio+20, this was a big conference because it was 20 years after 1992.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a big conference also because the UN wanted to decide on how to move forward with the topic of sustainable development on a global level. So they were at that point in time also referring back to what had happened that 20 years and how are they going to move forward. So also the UN is trying to revitalize or trying to get that clear on how they should move on with this topic on such a global level, because it's not always easy. So what was your other
and
question?
And as the Dutch UN youth representative, where do you fit into this structure?
Yeah, so there's actually the UN, when they talk about sustainable development, they have 8 major groups, and those are they regard this as the important groups of the UN. So that's, for example, the farmers, the women, the scientists, the trade organization, and there's also the youth constituency there. So this is the official forum for the young people to engage in the process. So we are allowed an observer spot on the table, so we're mainly in the back of the room, and sometimes we get a time slot to talk and to, but it's not like within negotiations about the text, but always like maybe more referring or like reviewing what's happening. So this is one spot where we fit in, so we work together with all global young people from all around the world who come to these conferences. And there's another spot where we fit in, and that's in the Dutch delegation. So in the national delegation, we work very closely together with our national representatives at those UN summits, and we also help them out and also give them feedback and input from the young people.
Now, is your position in the Dutch delegation, is that what is unusual in the structure of how other delegations might be organized?
Yes, not all all delegations have a youth representative in their delegation, but this is also one thing we're trying to advocate for. And also, like you mentioned, all the conferences I've been to. The first conference in New York, I wasn't part of my official delegation. Second conference, I wasn't part of my official delegation, but the other two conferences, I was. Because of that, we really advocated for that position. Also, we tried to show them our work and how we are committed to really contribute something useful to the conference. And we built up this relationship. So we want to. So they let us. They gave us the official youth representative pass. And we're also trying to get this for more young people in other delegations. Yes.
And then the third part of the question, in all of this work, we've got more time to talk about, you know, and develop other ideas. But just give us one example of something that really has affected you profoundly in these 2 years that you've been doing this work, whether it was an experience, an idea, an interaction with somebody, maybe just something that happened to you during this time that has been a big deal.
Yes, well, that's a good question. Well, I think I want to pick out one example of Rio Plus 20, because it was a huge conference and there was quite an open text still from the beginning. Although it's really hard to interfere in these texts they're making, because it's mainly governments negotiating about it. But at one point in the conference, where they just really want to hammer off all the texts, we actually, as young people, we agreed that there was something missing in the text on non-formal education. And we actually managed, with all the young people who were there, to go and ask our own national delegations and our governments to include a piece of the text. And we actually managed to get that little, like, a whole paragraph in the text. But what was the most special, I felt, was really in the General Assembly room of the UN, where they were negotiating and referring back, like, all the groups on the different topics, they report back on what happened. And, you know, it's kind of a UN setting, so it's kind of boring how they talk. You know, okay, we did it in a very constructive manner and we achieved this many words, but we're still having this many brackets and this many disagreements. But then when the woman of the education group started talking, and she's the same, talking like, okay, we had a very constructive but flexible group and blah, blah, blah. And then she said, but I'm very happy to announce, because we didn't know what happened to our piece of text, that the text on non-formal education has been accepted. And the whole room, like all the young people in the back, they started clapping. And so they made a lot of like their happiness very clear. So this was like a moment when the emotion entered the room, and you saw all the negotiators looking back like, what's going on? People really care about this text. They really were like even awake suddenly that something happened. And that to me was very special, also to get this bit of emotion in the room in the UN, where it's mostly, you know, very formal. And
So tell us what you mean by non-formal education and the significance of that particular piece of text.
Yeah, so non-formal education is actually all the education outside of the classroom, so outside of the formal structures of classrooms. And so it's actually it's all the work that has been done by, for example, the scouts or NGOs or, you know, lectures in free time, even boards from student association, excursions. And especially for sustainable development, which is something that really has to, you have to internalize it, and you really have to, you know, experience the importance of it. We feel that non-formal education, really to get out of your classroom and really experience what it is like to have a beach cleanup, or, you know, or what the scouts are doing, that it's really important to get that also recognized in the UN text. And actually, they are really moving forward with this piece of text, even in the UNESCO convention, so in another United Nations setting. So it's really actually also taken forward now, which is really impressive to achieve something as young people like that.
So it seems like in the lingo of this milieu, there is this thing called the text.
Yes.
So can you explain a little bit what is the text?
Actually, it's the resolution that, that's really the outcome of such a conference. So if you're in a conference, like the conference I've been to were mostly 2 weeks. And in these 2 weeks, what all the countries that come to the conference, what they do is they discuss the text. So this is basically the outcome of these 2 weeks of negotiations. So they really have it up on the screen and negotiate the words which should be in there or not. And that's really what they decide how to move forward on the issues they've been discussing about. So the text is actually, the main thing of the conference.
So what was the statement that was made about informal education then, as in this text?
So the statement was actually to recognize it. So to recognize non-formal education as an official, I think it was also referring to another UN text. To acknowledge it.
And so how would that translate into some kind of practical action or activity for somebody in their community, in their home country?
Well, in the end, I mean, it's always hard to get these abstract texts into real life, into practice. But how it usually should work is that this text is leading or... I mean, the national governments can use it to refer it to and to include it in their national policies. So this is how it should work, that it goes from UN to national policy and a national policy and to local policy. And then, you know, this is kind of the official way. But, I mean, of course, you can, as a citizen, you can now refer to the text your government agreed to and said, hey, U.S. government, you agreed to recognizing non-formal education. We're from the scouts in Moscow, and we actually have a very nice program, and maybe we need some funding or some recognition, or we need some exposure, attention to it. So you can actually, these texts are really to use it to hold your government accountable for it. And it's also really up to the citizens to really hold their government accountable for whatever they agree to in these texts, mm-hmm. to make it real life and make it work on the ground. Yeah.
So we have the good fortune to have Lisette Meddens here in the studio, the KRFP studio, with us today. And we covered a lot of official structural things and points and outlines and text and who does what where. And a thing that they say sometimes about conferences is that it's actually what happens outside of the agenda, what happens in the corridors and outside of the official meetings, and maybe even between the official meetings, that those are the critical interactions, and that you just have the, you have the big conference so that people come together and those interactions can take place. So I wondered if you could talk a little bit about some of the important interactions or connections that you've made or ideas that you've seen catalyze because people have gotten together that that weren't actually official actions taken at the meetings.
Yeah, sure. I think I totally agree with that. I mean, it's always that you've come there to talk about this text we were just talking about. But at the same time, there's a lot of people from around the world, for example, on the climate change conferences, who come together, who build a momentum really for climate change. And, you know, maybe Copenhagen was, I think, the biggest example of where this huge movement actually started or came together, where actually also because they see the progress in the conference and in these texts going a bit slow, that we also feel the responsibility to do things ourselves. And I think, a lot of things happen in the corridors, and a lot of, I think it's also finding each other, finding the movement you're in, and finding your allies there is very important.
Can you give an example of somebody that you connected with that has been important to you and maybe to yourself collectively, that you would never have met if you hadn't gone to one of these conferences?
Wow, that's a good question. I'm thinking about a specific person. Haven't thought about this before, but I think, one of the things we started, for example, in Durban was this Pink Youth campaign, where we just, I really also felt this momentum, so we should really like get people on video, who is like all the young people who are in their official delegation, that they could really speak out why it's so important to get them in their official delegation. So we, for example, made this video. For example, the Philippines are so lovely people, but they actually, their delegation is so open to youth involvement, and even their delegation got to speak on our video saying like how important it was for them to have youth involved in their delegation. And I think it's so important to get this out in the open, to even inspire also other delegations to see how this can be done. How can you listen to also new ideas and young people? How can you involve them? Because sometimes it's quite new for delegations to do this.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we were talking about, I'm thinking about this. Maybe we weren't talking about it directly and I'm making the connection. But we were talking about the word activist and activism, and I'm thinking about generational differences in communication. Can you tell the story about how activists and misunderstood behavior of so-called activists and something was just a real true and personal thing that happened to you in Doha?
Yeah, that was actually quite an issue. I mean, it quite got to me what happened there, because what we did was really like we were trying to think, how can we really have a positive influence on this conference, and not even only like, to me, activism sounds a bit like, okay, kicking the system, like, okay, it's wrong and we should change, and kicking it from the outside, but also bring a bit of a new refreshment and like a positive message or something through that people would be surprised, like, hey, what's going on and how. So we came up with this message from the young people saying, I am part of the solution, are you? as an open invitation to the UN, saying, okay, we already have solutions for climate change. We're doing it every day, actually. And we are wondering, will you join us in all these solutions? So this is what we did. And we had this big speech bubble, where it says on big letters, I am part of the solution, are you? And me and my colleague, a youth representative, we were sitting in the big General Assembly room opening of the Qatar Climate Summit, where the president just took place. And but we had to leave early. So we were walking out that room where we just, you know, at the balcony, at the back, we're listening in the meeting, but then you just silently, you know, go away. But we thought, oh, it's nice to take a picture on the balcony. And that's what we did. And we thought, hey, we have this nice sign with this nice message we're trying to advocate for. So, okay, let's hold up the sign. So we hold up the sign. But then the security was all over us, because they thought it was an action, activism, mm-hmm. you'd call it. And we were quite shocked, because we were just taking this picture. And of course, if I think back to it, it wasn't smart to do it in the General Assembly room when just the president took office in this very formal, official situation. But actually, the UN security, and they got like the higher level security guy came up to us, and they looked more official every time. And we're like, oh, what's going to happen? And they didn't know what they would do with us, because they actually wanted to throw us out, which even meant that we should have left Qatar, because we would have lost our visa if we'd been kicked out of the conference. But in the end, we were a part of the official delegation this year. Mm-hmm. So they couldn't kick us out, basically. So they didn't really know what to do. They never experienced before that people from a delegation stand up with a big sign in the General Assembly room. So this was where it got a bit weird. Like, in the end, they had a conversation with our delegation, very serious. This delegation talked to us very seriously that we should never do this again. But in the end, when our minister arrived, she immediately heard about this story, and she actually really liked it. Uh-huh. She actually liked our slogan. She liked our messaging, and she could really laugh about what happened. So this is the border of, you know, it wasn't really activism. It was really actually advocating for positive change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or just, I think what strikes me in that is that what a funny loaded word activism has become. And like, we were afraid you might be an activist because you know, like, action,
right?
That's very scary or something.
I think it's maybe put in a corner where people, and I don't think it's necessarily a good corner, because it is in that corner while we actually need to get out of that. Even environmentalists, I think it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't talk about environment as a separate thing. I think it should be integrated in the whole system, that we need positive change, and it's going to be in the direction that we're going to have make more efficient use of our natural resources, because it's logical, not because there's a bunch of environmental activists mm-hmm. who say that we should, but because it's economically sensible, or mm-hmm. it makes sense,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
it makes economic sense to actually include it in the system mm-hmm. and not leave that environmental activist in their corner.
Right. Yeah. It's a sensible action. So
right.
Take it. I want to jump back just for a second to the video that you were talking about. Is that something that people can view?
Yeah, actually it is.
Okay, so why don't you summarize it again real quick, and then tell people where they could go to find it.
So it's the Pink Youth. I think you meant the video where the official youth delegates speak about the importance.
Mm-hmm.
It's on YouTube, and mm-hmm. I hope mm-hmm. I say it correctly, but I think it's the Pink Youth Campaign.
Okay, so if you went to YouTube and looked up the Pink Youth Campaign,
right,
you could find
right.
this video.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I think about positive change and positive approaches to doing that, I always think about how hard it is to talk to people you disagree with. And I wonder if you have any stories to tell of, like, interesting interactions or personal growth in that whole difficult arena of the way that we come together is talking to the people who are most not like us.
Right. Yeah, it's actually, it happened, and it was actually quite, I was actually myself quite amazed what happened there, because maybe it was not the first thing that would come to mind if you ask this question, because we actually had a conflict within the youth group.
Mm-hmm.
So there were different ideas of how to advocate for this change or for, you know, to solve climate change, actually at the conference in Qatar, so last December. So we had this message where I was just talking about with the I am part of the solution and really like the positive way of, yeah, getting the solutions out there. And there was another group of young people who thought it was much more important to stress the urgency of the problem, so to get the stories of the people who face climate change today on a daily basis, to get those stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard for at least we tried to merge the two messages, because we wanted a common youth message, because we think it's strong to have one common youth message.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these I was just talking about the climate legacy. They called themselves Climate Legacy, so they were stressing this urgency. And we were part of the solution, so we were stressing the solutions, and we were trying to merge this, but this didn't happen. And we actually ended up in quite a conflict situation where they said, well, we need to stress the urgency and all the negativeness and all how bad it is. And we thought, man, no, we have to stress the solutions and how people are really doing good. And it was, and we never actually came to a point where we really strengthened or worked together or anything. But in the end, the conclusion was maybe we shouldn't even work together, and we should both do our own thing and then strengthen each other while not even talking maybe with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was, yeah, it was really hard to see that we ended up in such a conflict situation where we actually are young people and really want to achieve the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it in a different way, and we can't respect each other or cooperate with each other, which was really hard for us to see how that happened, actually.
Uh-huh. So when you're in a situation like that, and like you personally, or maybe just a person in general, what do you think you have to draw on inside of yourself to move through it and maybe move into territory that might be not really inside of your comfort zone to go forward.
The best thing we could have done is just step back and let it be, let reality be what it is, and not trying to make it something we want it to look like, because it came across very forceful. In the end, we wanted to force a common message and they wanted a common message, and it was it came across also the other youth around who were not that involved in one of the two messaging. They were really put off. They were like, okay, we're not going to do either way because you guys are just too dominant. So I think, and we really wanted it to have cooperation and to work together and to really understand each other and to become friends with each other. And I mean, that was my strategy at least. And what I've learned from it, I think it's just take a step back, just do what you think is good that you should do, and let it be. Respect them and respect yourself, and don't try to push it in a corner where it maybe doesn't fit.
We're talking in the KRFP studio today with Lisette Meddens, who is the Dutch representative to the UN, the Dutch youth representative to the UN, and she's deeply involved in work on climate change and sustainable development. And another of the th- things that I wanted to ask you about. It's kind of come up a little bit already in the sign and the communication and dealing, trying to establish common ground, or like you said, step back and accept people that have ideas that are different. Can you share some of your thoughts overall about global communication and climate change, how we get information about it, how we frame it, what the media tells us? Can you just share some of what your ideas are about that?
Yes, of course. Yeah, I think it's a bit problematic also how the media communicates about these climate summits. Also in the Netherlands, and I think in most countries, the media covers most of the negative parts of these summits. I mean, it's the most of the headlines are like, again, like very few things achieved, or process moving slow, or it's always the negative side of the conference that is being highlighted in the media, which I feel is a pity, because although the process is slow and the UN works on this level, there's no other way than that it's slow if you want to have consensus with all the countries of the world. And my other problem with that is also that it's often ending there. Like, media says, okay, the process is moving slow, dot, full stop. And it's like, but it's actually a big issue. If it's really moving too slow, we gotta think of alternatives and other ways of how are we gonna face the challenges, or how are we gonna address the challenges we're facing, and helping maybe the UN to do it in a different way. Most of the time there's not really an alternative presented, or the urgency from the process moving slow doesn't really appear from these articles, which is also a bit worrying, I think. Yeah. And then there's another part of it that at the conference itself, it's always the talk about mitigation and reduction of CO2. And it's like, if you talk about the environment, and we talked about it before, people feel like personally attacked sometimes, even attacked, like, okay, I can't drive my car, I have to reduce my holidays because I can't fly anywhere, or I have to reduce my showering hours or minutes. But if we start talking about innovation and change and how we renew and make things more effective, and how we use resources and everything we have in a more in an effective way, in a new way, with innovation, if we start talking about moving forward, actually, instead of moving backwards, I think we would create a whole different way of thinking about maybe also these conferences, and even the countries would be more appealed to interfere and to be involved. And then maybe the US and Canada and big countries who don't want to reduce, of course they don't want to reduce, but they might look a bit odd if they don't want to be involved with innovation, and, you know, if they are lagging back on a new step we're taking. Mm-hmm. So I think if we would change the language in these conferences even, it would make a big difference, yes, in progress. And I think we could move the whole global climate negotiations much faster if we don't wait for consensus and everybody to agree on a reduction pattern. Instead, we just let the countries move forward who want to, and who want to invest in renewable energy. For example, Germany is really great. They're doing great in renewable energy. Well, maybe we should cheer them and take it as an example, and even promote that, stimulate that. Mm-hmm. And then all the countries who want to walk together with Germany in the front row, they should go and do it. And then the other countries should feel like I'm missing out if I'm not if I'm not there in the front. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if you kind of like just sort of close your eyes and go to fantasy land, could you, well, no, I'm not going to call it fantasy land. Could you just describe the future that you believe in?
Yeah, I could. I actually, now I'm working for an organization who is really good at this, like describing it and even putting it into pictures, how mm-hmm. it's going to look like. Because a lot of people don't know and say like, okay, we need change. What kind of change? How does it look like? So I like this question. I think we have in a my ideal world, we have closed systems. So you call it the circular economy. So every resource we use it in an efficient way, and everything is not ending up in a big dump, like garbage dump, but we use it again. And we have beautiful cities where everything is much more green, because and the air will be very fresh. Because if everything is green, the air is very fresh. We have local food producing. Like everybody can produce their own food, and we are much more attached. We know our neighbors. We're much more attached to the neighborhood we live in. So we know where our food comes from. We know where our clothes are coming from, and where they're going to. if we stop using them, we have much more time for social interaction. We don't need to work 40 or maybe 50 hours a week. I don't know. How many hours do you work a week in the U.S.?
40 is like the sort of official standard number, but a lot of people work more than that.
Yeah, so we don't need to work that much. Absolutely not. Because if we have our local food produced, if we have the products we want, if we produce our own energy on our rooftops, we don't need a lot of money. But we have a lot of more time to spend with friends, people around in the neighborhood. We don't need to buy all that stuff to get more stuff, but we just buy what we need. Or we produce what we need, and we know the people who produced it because they became our friends. And we have much more time for social interaction and to just enjoy suddenly the beautiful city we live in, because it's all green mm-hmm. and sunny. So yeah, that's the perfect world, I would
say. All right. So I'm kind of curious about, you know, people can't see us, but like I'm retirement age and you're 26. So when I hear phrases like, by 2050, I'm thinking of a time when I'm not even going to be here on the planet. Mm. And when you hear phrases like by 2050, that's talking about the period of time which is essentially your adult life, I would think. Can you talk some more across or about maybe to me or maybe to people? You know, I'm curious about that difference in perspective that comes from, like, you and I being from very different generations.
Right. Well, actually, I'm quite excited that I'm going to experience this 2050. Because I know me in my lifetime, I'm going to experience a lot of change, I think. Uh-huh. Things are going to be very look very different in 2050. So I'm quite excited to being able to experience it. What I see is that a lot of people, maybe from your age or younger, who maybe are not going to experience 2050, those are the people who are in power now.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people sitting at the negotiation tables in the UN. Those are the people sitting in the Obama administration, mm-hmm. in all the governments, in the big companies. The people who are not going to experience that time frame, they are making the big decisions now. So this worries me a bit because they don't have that longer time frame. So this is why I also think that youth involvement is so important, and even also to get, maybe to give them also sometimes a bit of responsibility to let young people say what, how they see their future and how maybe the adults can help to achieve that. And I think there, it's really good to have, how do you say, intergenerational conversations like we're now having, because also we also from our generation lack the knowledge that you've already experienced throughout your lifetime. We don't know what it took for us to get us at this wealth level as we are now, because it's tremendous, like what generations before us have achieved for us to have this level of, you know, getting to school and having holidays and coming into the supermarket and having food from all over the globe. A lot has happened in history which most of the young people don't realize. So I think it's very important to have a conversation between generations to share from the generation, like your generation, what happened in history, and also to share the new ideas of the young people, what should happen in the future. So yeah, I think it's a very, very good topic. Yeah.
So, Lisette Middens, I really want to thank you for coming to the studio today. It's just astonishing how fast an hour goes. We've only got like about a minute and a half left. Final words, one last something or other that you want to let us know before you go.
Well, I think I also want to thank everybody for listening, and I think I want to invite everybody to become part of the solution. So we have a Facebook page. If you go to www.facebook.com and then a / and then are you part of the solution, there you can upload your picture and make a picture of yourself to show that you're part of the solution. So let's all become part of this positive, forward-looking movement so we can achieve positive change together, and we'll in the end also tackle climate change and live in a sustainable world together.
Thank you very much, Lisette. Thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Je hebt geluisterd naar jongerenvertegenwoordiger Lisette Middens in een interview over klimaatsverandering en positieve verandering met interviewer Nancy Casey in de studio's van KRFP in Moscow, Idaho in de Verenigde Staten. Dit programma was geproduceerd door KRFP Radio Free Moscow. Download het interview op krfp.org en met muziek door Kevin MacLeod.